Hello and welcome to Right Back At Ya, the noughties pop music podcast with myself, Joel Babington, and my co-host, David Liam. And as some people call him, the Thunder from Down Under, Dave himself.
We were just talking before we started recording about how some people back home in Australia call me Dave, including my own mother, my mum. Sometimes I get like a Facebook message just out of the blue and it's just like, Dave. Dave, the internet is not working.
Fix it. Yeah. Oh, no, you are not a Dave. There is no way you're a Dave. I mean, I call you David, which is quite formal. Yesterday, one of your colleagues was surprised that I don't call you Limmy like a lot of people do, but you're just David to me, you know. It's, you know, I had to work for you to, for us to be friends when we first moved in together. So I wasn't at a place to just start calling you Limmy. So I was like, hi, David. Ooh, you like Selena Gomez. So do I. Maybe we could be friends. And then the David just stuck. You've never transitioned to Limmy.
Oh, goodness. So it's sort of like I'm at a Stacey Ferguson level with you. Not quite Fergie, but it's okay.
Call you Fergie. It's I'll only call Pink Alicia. We went to see Blackpink.
This is like a live update. There's so many shows.
The world.
Where do we have space in our diary to do more podcasts?
We don't.
Someone actually left us a comment on Apple saying, like, literally dragging us for not having more episodes in the nicest possible way.
Yeah, I saw. They said, "I just wish there was more episodes." Right?
Yeah, there was like a new one every week or something. We would love that. We would absolutely love to do more episodes every single week if we could, if we physically could.
Yeah, well, I would love that. And you know, we both work in showbiz. And to quote Dave, "Showbiz never sleeps." We went to see Blackpink and it was incredible. Mm. We made friends with a little 12-year-old in the queue. Oh, so where's your favourite Blackpink song? And then she likes Boombayah and Solo, and we both like, as if it's your last out favourite. And she goes, it's a little bit girly, that one. But it was so sweet. She was there with her dad and you could tell he wasn't interested in being there, but he was being a really good dad.
Yeah,
he
supportive.
Was supportive of his child. She was asking him so many things, like, about, can't wait for them to sing this one, and talk to him about it. And he was really, you know, how he wasn't being dismissive with it.
Yeah.
We were acting like little kids ourselves, running to get to our seats in time.
Yeah, because they literally came on stage as we were at the top of our row. So we were like, move, bitches, let us through so we can get to our seats. Like,
and I'd say we had fantastic seats. We had such a hard time getting those seats. Do you remember?
Yeah, it was difficult. But that whole arena was packed the F out.
Yeah, it was full. No sections blocked off.
And later, in a few hours, Joel, you and I are going to see Mariah.
Mariah, darling.
Like, we're talking about my favourite artist of all time, Mariah. So I'm going to be completely immersed in a moment. Mm. At the Royal Albert Hall, like, wow.
I've always, you know, had huge respect for Mariah, but Glitter, surprisingly, is my way in with Mariah.
It's not surprising considering you're a film buff and you do like looking into these sort of weird cult fan favourites.
Exactly. And the only Mariah albums I'd listened to was Glitter and Caution.
Wow.
And you were like, shall we go? And I was like, yeah, cool, let's go for it. And I'm so excited. Mm. I've, like, really dived into her back catalogue and...
You've listened to the Emancipation Mimi, Butterfly?
Well, I've listened to This Is Mariah on Spotify.
Okay,
and
so you've
now,
got...
And now I'm, like, off book with the set list. Well, pretty much off book.
Okay, good.
And then I'll go back and really dive in, but I just wanted to focus...
On, you know, getting yourself ready.
Being able to duet with her tonight. You know, I had to be ready for that.
She's a phenomenal songwriter and she should absolutely be celebrated more for her songwriting, really. I could go on about it, but there's a whole other podcast that is dedicated to Mariah. So they've definitely chewed up all the air on that. So,
and it's a fantastic podcast.
And I love them. So I love listening to the Mariah Report.
Yeah, shout out to their Glitter episodes because they were fantastic.
Oh, that was a good, good deep dive.
So before we move on completely, we're here, we're at the series finale of series 2.
Wow, yeah, this is it. We specifically wanted to save this act for the final episode because we you know, obviously want it to be a big deal, but also there's like a landmark anniversary.
Yeah, we're here today to celebrate 20 years of S Club 7.
20 years, two decades. Can you believe?
2 decades.
I feel old.
Of S Club 7. And the great thing is that it's kind of full circle because we started series one with S Club Juniors.
And that was actually a year ago from roughly when we're recording right now. So, I mean, S Club 7, very iconic pop group from the noughties, obviously. Everyone, like, literally known all over the world. They were only together for a very short time, only 4 years, but they achieved so much in that time. 11 singles, 4 of them were UK number ones, 4 studio albums and a greatest hits, sold 10 million albums worldwide. They made 4 seasons of their TV series, which was aired in over 100 countries, watched by over 90 million people. 90 million people. They had a couple of one-off TV movies, and they had a theatrical release film as well, plus 2 documentaries and a reality talent search show. 3 tours as well on top of that.
You say 4 years. In that time, that was a good, healthy, long time for a British pop band in the explosion of pop as we know and love it. This band is amazing. Like, I love them so much. I would say they are definitively my favourite pop band. Potentially, it's tough, but potentially more than the Spice Girls.
No way!
Potentially.
No way.
It's because...
But I feel like because the Spice Girls was a little bit more 90s, but you maybe... Like, this sort of clicked with when you were consuming music at a certain age where you were able to really immerse in the fandom. Am I right? Like, this was sort of the right age for you?
Yeah, I think... Spice Girls got me hooked and I was obsessed and I've non-stopped being obsessed with them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess I was, 8? They were made for me. And I think where the Spice Girls were everyone's, and even though S Club 7 were off the walls hugely successful, it feels a little bit more personal.
Yeah, I mean, they were essentially at the very, very beginning anyway, or actually for maybe 2/3 of the career, they were a children's group. They were aimed at children. You know, that they had the TV series. We get into all that good stuff because I saw them more as just a regular pop group. I didn't see the TV shows when they came out. I didn't consume it in that way. So my perspective looking back on S Club 7 is a little bit different from yours, where you were here to be able to bask in all 360 degrees of everything they were doing.
Yeah, I mean, I loved them so much that me and my mum went out to buy their single.
Oh.
That sounds like a casual thing, but it wasn't. I couldn't just buy any old CD. Like, it was a real event to have the opportunity to do that. And their first single straight off the back, it was like, yes, I need that. And we bought the cassette single from Debenhams, and it didn't work. Or it wasn't S Club 7, so we took it back.
What do you mean it wasn't S Club 7?
I was playing some random music.
Oh my God.
Even though it was an error. I think it was a pressing error because it said S Club 7 on the tape.
Oh.
And I was just like, Mum, this isn't...
Sabotage.
This is not Bring It All Back. So we took it back. And then we got the CD single instead.
So last episode, we talked about going to Dan's place and picking up a bunch of CD singles from the noughties and 90s. And in that huge haul of CDs that we brought back in a massive blue IKEA bag were a couple of S Club 7 CD singles.
More than a couple.
So yeah, I'm just putting them here right next to our mic so we can look at these gorgeous, you know, pictures. Oof. Look at them, so wholesome.
You know how you're saying they're more manufactured for kids? Yes, they were, but they also felt quite cool for what they were in terms of, in the mainstream pop zeitgeist, they were kind of paired against Steps a lot. And I love Steps so much. Love, love, love Steps. But it was always S Club 7, hands down. They felt a lot cooler than Steps.
I mean, Steps and S Club 7 were very kind of... were quite different in the way they presented. So shall we talk about the origins?
Please.
So, S Club 7 was formed by the great and almighty Simon Fuller.
Yes, they were.
In 1998. Now, he allegedly... like, this is his account of it. Allegedly came up with the idea for the band a day after he was fired by the Spice Girls.
What a way to just do it.
Yeah, and it's just like, fuck y'all, I'm gonna make my millions elsewhere. and you're going to see, right?
The Spice Girls were a band that was signed by Simon. They were already a band first, so they had that power to walk away.
Yeah.
Simon wanted to create something that was his from the get-go, so they didn't have that. You know, it was Simon Fuller's product. It was 100% him. They wouldn't have the power to just walk away.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he, you know, the contracts would have been very ironclad. You know, he wasn't messing about this time.
And it's rumoured, I actually don't think this is true, but I read a rumour online once that Miami 7 was originally intended for the Spice Girls.
Oh.
That it was originally going to be called Miami Spice, and that Simon Fuller had bought the airtime. So it was a product that was sort of ready to go, so he created S Club 7 and retooled it to fit that mould. I don't think that's personally true, but that would be hella interesting if it was.
Yeah, that's interesting. So maybe there is a little bit of fire to that smoke, perhaps. So he set about auditioning over tens of thousands of young performers. Now, it didn't really dawn on me at the time of, at the start of me researching this, but they weren't just looking for singers and dancers. They were looking for people that could act as well. So this is like, you've got to be really on it. And also, just to think about it, just because it's not necessarily that you're the best singer, the best dancer, the best actor. It's how you gel with the other characters in the group as well. I can't even imagine the casting process for this. That would just literally take forever. Just to get the chemistry right, the look right, the combination. So, we've got the seven members. We've got Bradley, we've got Hannah, we've got Joe, we've got John, we've got Paul, Rachel, and Tina. They're all aged between 17 and 22, roughly, when they joined the band. So Rachel was the only member of the group who didn't audition.
Oh, direct offer for Miss Stevens.
Joe and Paul were spotted by producers from 19 Management and asked to audition. And the rest of them came through the kettle call, as they like to call it.
Yeah, it's really interesting to wonder what they were all doing at that time.
Yeah.
Like what they were kind of other things they were auditioning for. Like at that early stage in her career, was Hannah focused on acting? Was Tina, like, focused on dancing?
Well, we know Tina came from another group.
So Tina was an original member of an early incarnation of Mystique.
Can you imagine Mystique with Tina in it?
Yeah. Alicia, Sabrina, Tina. And that fourth member that was only in the first single.
Oh, yeah. Whatever her name was.
Starts She's fabulous, though.
Starts with a Z. Yeah. Good for her.
Good for her.
Yeah.
So I think the story is that Rachel was spotted in a canteen or something visiting her brother at work.
Oh, really? Right place, right time. But yeah, I mean, if you wanted to, you know, we really celebrate Rachel, in case you haven't realised. We did a whole episode on Rachel Stevens. So please do check out that episode if you want a proper deep dive into the world of Rachel.
From the get-go, you have these seven strong personalities. And that's why S Club 7 works so well. In the TV show, we really get to know who each of them are, the character, quote unquote, of them. They are. They're playing the heightened versions of themselves.
Yeah.
So far as in their second single, S Club Party, there's this sort of sungy rap version to say what each seven member's up to. They might not all sing all the time, but you know who each member are, and they're an integral part of the group.
So what are your theories about the S in S Club 7? Let's talk about the name.
19 Management, S is the 19th letter.
S is the 19th letter, and thus S. Not Simon's Club 7.
Possibly, I think it's a little bit of everything. 7 Club 7, Simon Fuller Club 7.
Yeah, S from 7, yeah.
19 Management, it's the 19th letter.
Yeah, I like that theory.
You know, at the time I think they said, you know, it's just like S Club, like it can be whatever you want it to be.
Shall we talk about Miami 7 quickly? This is the world's first look at S Club 7. It's not necessarily my first look of it, but this was how everyone received the band. They were in a TV series where they play fictionalized characters of themselves. Mm-hmm. And what do they do? I mean, this is, you and I sat down and watched this.
Oh, so good.
It's classic, really good, well-written, very funny children's program.
Yeah, extremely well-written for what it is. You know, like Spice World, it has no right to be as good as it is.
Actually, it's funny that you mentioned Spice World because it was created and partially written by Kim Fuller,
Simon's brother,
who wrote Spice World. So there is that, you know, talk about keeping it in the family.
Mm. In the first episode, we're in Britain, and they're kind of demanding to their agent. They've got this really naff-like agent. He looks after magicians and things like that. They're like, come on, we need a job. And to kind of just sort of flog them off a bit, this job in Miami comes along, and they think they're going to be singing at this really glamorous hotel. They think it's kind of the dream job. They get there, and it's this really run-down motel run by these kind of...
really tight, penny-pinching guys.
Kind of like, not crooks, but borderline crooks. And S Club sort of have to basically be hotel staff as well as onboard entertainment. And at first they want them to sing really naff songs that aren't their songs. Like, Paul sings the lead of Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree. And then they're like, nah, sod this. They take out the hair, the naff hair bunches they've got, and then they do S Club Party. And everyone in Miami at the hotel's loving it. And then the rest is just a series of hijinks that ensues along that.
Mm. One of my favourite parts of Miami 7 is when Kathy Dennis has a recurring role. Queen Kathy Dennis, who we all know and love as a celebrated songwriter, an artist in her own right in the 80s. She plays, what, a TV star, a movie star in Miami 7?
Kind of like, a bit like a Sarah Michelle Gellar or a Gillian Anderson, this kind of sci-fi female television
queen.
Lead superstar.
Yeah.
But she was fantastic.
It was so much fun. It was so much fun. And obviously Kathy would go on to have a greater role in S Club 7's career as well. She goes on to write lots of their hits. I mean, at the time, people didn't realise, but this is very seminal in the kind of pop universe that we would see unfold over the next two decades. Mm. Because this really was a blueprint for things like Glee, for High School Musical, if you think about
really it. Really game-changing. An absolutely genius move, because this show ended up being the number one kids show in the UK.
Wow.
Hugely successful around the world. You get to hear two songs an episode. This is pre-downloads and everything, so you'd see these two songs per episode. By the end, you've basically got the audience already heard the first album.
Oh my God,
they all want to run out and buy it.
Yeah.
It gives the band a chance to promote. From filming one TV show, they basically promote worldwide in territories they'd never be able to get to.
Mm. Kids know the songs.
And at the end of that first series, Bring It All Back's released, which is the theme tune to the show.
Yeah.
What happens? It goes straight in at number one.
Never give up, hold your head high and reach the top. Let the world see what you have got. Bring it all back to you.
Bring it all back now.
Dream of falling in love. Anything you've been thinking of. When the world seems to get too tough, bring it all back to you.
June 1999, Bring It All Back, the debut single by S Club 7.
A song is just so feel-good fun, such a positive message. It just makes you feel like it's just a shot of life is good, you can do anything you want, and don't you stop trying.
It's sweet.
It's so sweet.
S Club 7, the members are credited as songwriters on this.
I also found that out today.
It's rare for S Club 7 to co-write their own singles. It doesn't happen all the time, but I love that straight out the gate, first single, they've got their names on it. And it's also co-written by Elliot Kennedy, who wrote Say You Be There for the Spice Girls. Mm-hmm. Oh, I should say with the Spice Girls. The track is produced by Tim Lever and Mike Percy, who used to be in Dead or Alive.
Tim and Mike, if you're listening, please could you get in touch with Jessica Simpson and just start working on her definitive comeback album? Thank you.
I was waiting for when Jessica Ann would get referenced in this episode.
Oh, Jessica Ann.
Every single episode. When we get around to doing a Jessica Simpson episode, we're actually not going to record any new material. It's just going to be everything that Joel's ever said about J-Sim in all our episodes. So there are two different versions of this music video, Joel.
Mm-hmm. Both at the root have the beach performance, but then the other... So sometimes it's just the pure video, and then there's another version which has clips added to it from the television show.
Mm.
This song was everywhere. I remember their Top of the Pops performance came on TV. I was at a childhood friend's, and one of the boys in the group of friends I was in was at his house, and his mum was so strict. Like, I grew up in a very...
UBU kind of.
UBU household.
Yeah.
And this house was the opposite. And then I actually had my backpack on. I was just about to leave. And then that came on the TV. I went in their living room and I just danced in the middle of the living room, going absolutely crazy. And they were like, oh, Joel really likes this one then, doesn't he? And I'm probably there like, giving it everything. And
you were never invited back.
I was never invited back. I brought it all back and I was never invited back. But look, I was 8 years old and I was living my truth.
Bring It All Back debuted at number one in the UK. Platinum sales, the biggest first week sales of their career, definitely. Selling over 190,000 copies in the first week. They blocked Madonna's Beautiful Stranger from number one.
Sorry, Madge.
Sorry, girl, but you know.
Are you going to see Madonna at the Palladium?
No.
No, I don't know who is, like, do you know anyone that's going?
Yeah. Yeah, you must. Yeah.
There are loads of people.
There are power gays that are going to that. Yeah.
David's got loads of friends, I don't, basically.
There are some people out there that are going, yeah. Bring It All Back would go on to sell more than 600,000 copies. It made number three in Australia, so we felt it out there. I mean, number three in Ireland. Number one in New Zealand.
Yes! Love you, New Zealand.
It's like, this is becoming a bit of a New Zealand stan account. Yeah. Like, we are, like, we every need single
to,
week
we
now.
We really need to start doing, like, paid Facebook ads for New Zealand.
Yeah, targeted. Because that is definitely one country where you wouldn't get someone going, what is a vitamin C?
No. Sorry, Mum.
Bring It All Back even touched the US charts. It was released there in September, a few months after everyone else got it here. Made number 22 on the US Billboard Hot Singles Sales Chart.
You said that so confidently and like your face was like so proud of that, which is amazing.
Which is what this podcast is. We are proud of these like little achievements.
Little? Big. So 13 in Austria, 2 in Belgium.
It's like you're reading out the Eurovision results.
Yes. And look, I'm desperate to be one of those professional judges one year. It's like, come on, I've worked in showbiz all my life. What more do I need? Like, I've worked on The Voice. I trained at stage school, the same school that Joe O'Meara went to. Eurovision, I am available.
So, Bring It All Back, just before we leave it, was covered by a Taiwanese pop star called Jolene Tsai a year after it came out, and she retitled it as Don't Stop. Now, I find this very fascinating because Jolene is, like, basically, she's been hailed as the queen of Chinese pop.
Great.
You know, think about this as the career and cultural significance of Britney with the business acumen of J-Lo. That is motherfucking Jolene Tsai.
Oh my goodness.
She has an empire.
And the album was called Don't Stop as well.
Yeah.
Don't stop, never give up.
'This song changed my life, Don't Stop, Bring It All Back. I was going by Don't Stop, the Taiwanese title. Literally was the music form antidepressant that my 8-year-old self didn't realise I needed.
Wow.
So thank you, Simon. Thank you, all 7 members of S Club. This TV show was amazing. I've gone back and watched it many times since.
It's all on YouTube, isn't it?
Most recently with you. It's online if you Google it. I imported the VCD from Hong Kong.
Oh.
I needed it that badly.
VCD. I love
because
that.
Because it was only released on VHS here, VHS in the States. It was really released on DVD somewhere in Europe, but not with the English audio. So I had to get the VCD from Hong Kong with the hard-coded subtitles, but I didn't care. And I just watched it. I had the VCDs of Miami 7, LA 7, Hollywood 7. Unfortunately, Viva S Club's not had a general release anywhere in the world.
Oh.
And I would watch these shows again and again and again. Years after S Club had broken up, it was so uncool to like them, but I didn't care.
Mm. Well, why should you care? If it brings you happiness, if it brings you joy, go for it. we need to start importing some of these tracks onto our... I'm holding up the CD single for Bring It All Back. It's got an extended mix. Have you ever heard the extended mix of Bring It All Back? You must have. You have this on CD single.
It's a B-side. The other B-side was Hello Friend.
Okay.
Which...
on CD too.
Which they went as far to sing when Paul left in Viva S Club. So in Series 4, that was part of the storyline, Paul left. And they sung Hello Friend then. So in the fourth series of their TV show, they're singing a B-side from their first single. Isn't that amazing?
I mean, you know, if you're deep in the S Club universe as a fan, you would definitely be living for that moment.
And I think Joe and John sung it on the reunion tour.
Hello Friend, I know you're smiling, but believe you don't have to pretend. I know at times it seems your broken heart might never mend. Hello, friend, yeah.
Hello, girl. I had lost my faith in humankind until your call.
Okay, so next comes September 99, S Club Party.
What Wannabe did, and since Say You'll Be There Cemented, is what Bring It All Back did and S Club Party did.
Wow.
It was like, we're having this big party, you want to get on board, because there ain't no party like an S Club party.
Mm-hmm. I just love that this is a much different and cooler production than Bring It All Back. To me, Bring It All Back sounded like a jingle for like a TV, like a children's TV commercial. Nothing wrong with that. It sort of worked. But this one is sort of more in keeping with what was happening in the world at the time. You know, they had the hip hop flavor in there and still like really big 90s pop melodies. The brief was ABBA meets New Kids on the Block.
So do you know what's crazy, David, is that S Club 7 had an entire TV series by their first single.
Mm.
And by their second single, they'd had a feature-length TV special, Back to the 50s, which is on par with Back to the Future for me. Mental.
So this is meant to be a parody of Grease and Back to the Future, isn't it?
Yeah, so basically S Club are driving round. It's the segue between Miami 7 and LA 7.
Mm.
They're having a sort of road trip. What's their next adventure going to be? And they somehow go back to the 1950s.
Do you know what was really funny in this? So in the car they're driving, right? They reach 999.
Guys, look at all the numbers on the pedometer.
It's lining up to 999. And then they're like, oh, what's going to happen? Will it go over to zero, and then what happens? So it turns out it goes to zero.
And they travel back in time.
Yeah. But don't you think that's really clever? This came out in the year 99 when everyone was freaking out about Y2K. What's going to happen? Genius writing. I mean, just brilliant.
This music video is all from Back to the 50s. Like, that clip is Back to the 50s in the TV special. That's the start of them going back in time.
Yeah. Do you find it quite interesting that from the get-go, this British group has been implanted into the American landscape?
I think it's genius, really. I think it's better branding globally. You know, from working in TV with shows in development and stuff, there's always that, how is a British show going to be able to be sold to other territories? And kind of...
Do you think it's more palatable if it was people, an American setting?
Yeah, people are trying to make happen is either like a British-American co-production.
Okay.
Or a British show set in America, but it's so hard to do that well, which they did.
It's so hard to do well, yeah. Because it's just culturally, it's just so different. But, you know, you frame it like this, a British band getting a job in America, and you know, you get the whole culture clash, them learning about different... Yeah, it's fun. There's lots of fun to be had with this type of narrative and this type of situation that they're setting up for. So, S Club Party debuted at number 2 in the UK, certifying gold. number two in Australia, platinum.
There ain't no party like an S-Club party. I need to buy several copies.
You channeling Jermaine or something?
I don't know.
Their second consecutive number one single in New Zealand, our favourite country.
Our favourite country. We have to book a holiday to New Zealand.
I mean, and let's face it, this is a fucking banger. You cannot have any kind of noughties pop party without playing this.
And it tells you what all seven members are doing. Tina's doing her dance. John's looking for romance. Paul's getting down on the floor while Hannah's screaming up for more. You want to see Bradley swing? You want to see Rachel do her thing? Then you got Jo. She's got the flow. Get ready, everybody, because here we go.
S Club.
You know that this song brought in the new year at GAY that year.
Really?
Yeah.
So this ushered in the millennium?
The millennium. I think it's genius that they called their debut album S Club and the second album Seven.
I didn't even notice that till now.
Come on, Mr. Lim.
I did not even notice that until now. So, let's start with the artwork, because this was, you know, can be quite difficult to capture seven people, you know, in a pose situation. So they've gone with a moving shot of them, yes, running through the water. It's golden hour. Everyone looks good in, you know, in that time of the day when the sun is setting, that lovely glow. Which one's Paul in that one? Oh, he's in a black tank top. Ooh,
so I tell you, like, in especially in the first two albums, gorgeous. Like, really gorgeous. You can just see why Hannah wanted it.
Yeah. This album,
David. S Club's debut album, S Club.
Absolutely fantastic bunch of people that worked on this. Stargate. Absolute, who did the Spice Girls' first two albums, did this. Elliot Kennedy, like we said before. We're going to talk about the singles in detail, obviously, when we come to it. There's so many great singles from this. Speaking of album tracks, my personal favourites are Viva La Fiesta. Anything with a like kind of rhythmic kind of flavour to it, I gravitate towards on this album. What were your favourite album tracks?
Viva La Fiesta, as you said, aka the original Fuego.
And what's that Cheetah Girls song?
Oh, Amiga's Cheetahs.
Amiga's Cheetahs. They paved the way for that.
Yeah, exactly. Friday Night is really good. It's a feel-good thing. It's an S-Club thing. When have you ever known me to like a ballad? I Really Miss You is a stunning track. When I was 16 and I started going for private singing lessons, he was like trying to make me sing really like cool music. And one week I sang I Really Miss You.
Oh.
I wanna tell you the things I've seen. I wanna take you to where I've been. And I wish you were here with me. Don't you know? I really miss.
And Rachel Lauren Stevens has a stunning vocal, a ballad, and it's a standout track on the album. Jo Whitney O'Meara could never.
Is her
I don't know what her middle name is.
Look it up. I think it's Michelle.
Oh my god, no, it's not.
What is it?
Joanne Valder O'Meara.
Huh?
Joanne Valder O'Meara.
Valder.
V-A-L-D-A. It's very probably someone in Romford's like, yeah, I've put her middle name as Valda. I think that's Judge International.
So, S Club, the album, spent a total of 50 weeks on the UK albums chart.
It did number two in New Zealand and in the United Kingdom.
Number two album.
Number two album. Straight off the bat.
The album stayed in the top 20 for 12 consecutive weeks.
At the end of year charts in 1999, in the UK it was the 21st best-selling album, and then for the year 2000, it was the 51st best-selling album of the year. 2 years!
Now next comes, in December of 99, a double A-side single, Two in a Million /
Let's find a different
You're my number one.
You're
Who's doing this? This is so bad.
You're my number one. I'd do anything for you. I'd take a rain from the sky, even hold back time for you.
Girl. So, okay, let's start with Two in a Million. This is the first time we're seeing Jo O'Meara take the lead vocals and, you know, have her kind of Claire Richards moment.
This then sets kind of the blueprint for what we're going to see. Jo front and centre singing, six other people selling it.
Let's talk about this music video because this is stunning. I think this is one of their best music videos and also really amazing that third single in, first time we're getting a pop star look from the group, because everything else has been like off the back of the TV shows.
Yeah,
it's just it's
like more like a strappy top and trousers,
but it's like everything is styled specifically for this video. It's not like it's styled for their characters on a TV show.
This is like glamour.
This
apart
is great.
From Hannah's cultural appropriation with those
talking about it's her like, micro dreadlocks.
Yeah, it's like what you're trying to do with Faye. Only Faye from Steps can do the dreads. She can do big dreads and she can do small dreads. And that's the only white person in the world that can do it.
What about Joe's, like, clipping ponytail? The long blonde ponytail? I was living for that. I love a high pony. Like, that is me down to a brand.
This is a typical, like, that's like a Romford girl going to her prom hairdo. Or, like, really good night out. Or, like, she's a bridesmaid at her friend Shanice's wedding. Who's also her cousin, but they're, like, best friends.
You're talking
but
about
she
this.
She will like punch you if you look at her the wrong way, or she'll get her boyfriend to deck you, or her brothers, or her cousins, or her Uncle Tom. Don't keep any of that in because I.
With tears.
I've made David cry.
So look, listen, this is a very beautiful music video. Huge LA mansion. They're all living together.
I want an Airbnb where this was filmed.
I want an Airbnb the other music video location.
Have you ever?
Yes.
We'll get to that.
I mean, you know, where, yeah, good locations out there. So, yeah, but like I said, I just find it interesting that they waited to a third single to sort of give us this moment. But you know, you've got a big TV show and a one-off sitcom selling it.
Set them up. You don't want to, like, alienate the audience. So it's like, you're part of our gang, be part of our gang, and now we're glamorous.
Yeah. Let's talk about the other half of the single, You're My Number One, which we just beautifully sung for you. Now, you can tell that there wasn't as much budget left for this
music
video.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? But then, how much budget did they use on all those extras at the end?
Yeah, at the end they brought in... So basically, it's a plain white backdrop music
white
video.
Studio, yeah.
White studio location.
And the costumes are a bit...
It's what you wear when you go on GMTV to promote your new single.
It's that zany part of the 90s, you know? So you've got, like, you've got typical 90s fashion... And then you've got, like, in the Two in a Million video, sort of that, like, slick black, we're entering the year 2000 look.
Yeah, you know, there's lots of pleather going on there.
And now we've got that kind of zany 60s, 70s throwback part of 90s fashion, which is a bit, like,
lots
so
of
much.
Colours, lots
so
of
much going
prints,
on.
It's cargo pants. It's...
I would actually like to, like, wear a Hannah's top the most. I would like kind of stretch that out and style it out.
But I have to say, even though it's a very simple video, they really, well, they had nothing else to do but to serve you choreography.
Yeah, but even like the eyeshadow and stuff, it's like...
It's a lot.
Yeah. It feels sort of contractual in a way. We've got no budget, but we have this space. These are the only clothes we have left. And unfortunately, this is the only makeup we've got, and we have to use all of it.
So the double A-side single, Two in a Million and You're My Number One, made number 2 in the UK, number 25 in Australia. Maybe we missed the memo. Their third consecutive number 1 single in New Zealand.
And I don't think they ever toured New Zealand. They never toured outside the UK, which is a real shame.
Really? Not even like the odd shows in America?
They did like live at Fox Family Arena.
Yeah.
And things like that. If there was a one-off... It wasn't Music Mania, but if it was something like Music Mania, they like popped up and did some stuff.
Now, Joel, around this time, didn't they have another one-off TV sitcom film?
Boyfriends and Birthdays was before LA7. It's not as standout for me as Back to the 50s, but it did also happen.
But think about the planning of this. Like, to mastermind the first year of S Club 7, you had to film a whole fucking TV series, and plan an album, single campaign, and
two TV movies
off after this TV series has run. You know, normally people would get like, oh, you know, like with, say with pop stars, you had Hearsay happen out of the whole series, you know, big TV moment leading up to Pure and Simple. And then after that, there sort of wasn't anything else. But Simon Fuller's like, no, we started with a TV show, we're going to keep this shit going. Can you imagine how fucking hard they worked?
Oh, they must have
this been... year alone.
They literally, when bands say we didn't have any time to enjoy it, I can imagine S Club didn't have any time to enjoy
nothing. They wouldn't even know what fucking I think day they, of the
yeah,
week it was.
So busy to be like, what's going next? Where are we? What's going on?
And you know, because you work in TV and all that, that filming long fucking days, aren't they? Oh my God. Lots of waiting around. And this was before Twitter and Instagram. So what the fuck were they doing on set to kill the time?
Probably recording the album. Recording the next album.
Probably doing press, doing phone interviews from LA or Miami or wherever they were. Like, we've got Digital Spy on the phone. We've got Smash Hits magazine. Do they want to come on set? Exclusive behind the scenes photos. I'm planning what I think would be the press campaign for this. Come and get a quote for The Sun.
What I would have loved, and obviously the world wasn't there yet, I think if we lived in a world where S Club were out now, I like to think we live in a world where John could be out from quite early on in the career.
Yeah.
Quite. And just how amazing that would have been. Like, imagine me as this 8-year-old boy that loved them, knowing that it was okay to be who you are.
And there's a character on TV that's celebrated and embraced by all his friends from, you know, different walks of life.
Yeah. Like, imagine what that would have been like.
Imagine the impact this would have had. This fucking, you know, series was watched by 90 million people around the world. So before we round out 99 for the very busy S Club 7, they also played Party in a Park to over 100,000 people. Now, bear in mind, this is a band that has had, at this point, 3 hit singles. 4, because, you know, double A-side, I guess. Hit album, hit TV series, like literally top-rated TV show, like you said. And they've not even toured. They've not had time to put together a tour.
No one tours after a first album, though.
Hearsay.
But it did feel a smidge too soon.
But, you know, it is what it is. When there's a demand, sometimes you just got to jump on it. Mm. But the truth is that even if they wanted to, where would they do it? When? There was no time. So Party in a Park, great opportunity. 100,000 people, go do that. You know.
Or as Michelle Williams, bless her, would say, over 1 million people were there. Did you not see that clip that kind of went viral on Twitter?
No.
And they were like, what's the biggest crowd you performed to? And she went, in the UK, they have this thing called Party in the Park. And it's for like over 1 million people.
There's no park in the world big enough for 1 million people. But maybe she was counting like the viewing figures.
Viewing figures. Yes, Michelle.
Yeah. Over 1 million people watched it.
Publicist ready to pounce.
Yeah. Can we pause?
Yeah, I'm a bit worried that we need to start getting ready to leave.
It's Club 7.
It's 4 girls.
And 3 boys.
From England.
That's across the Atlantic.
Atlantic. Take a left at France.
You Yanks may not have heard of our band yet.
Believe me, you will.
The group that went to number one in England has their own TV series. S Club 7 in Miami. Weekends at 11, 10 Central. Only on Fox Family Channel.
The States will never be the same.
Are we recording?
Yes, we are.
Okay, so, David, we've just taken a 24-hour break from recording. We had to stop because we had tickets to see Mariah Carey on the Caution World Tour at the Royal Albert Hall.
That was iconic. It was such a special moment for me. Mariah is my favourite artist of all time, and to see her at the Royal Albert Hall was just so beautiful. So special. She did such a great show. And it's just, we had good seats.
We had great seats.
We could see her with our own eyes. There was
no
need to zoom.
11th row. 11th row.
Yeah. There was no need to look at the screens if we didn't want to.
I didn't look at the screens. I'm so happy we paid far too much money for tickets.
But we got a keyring out of it.
We got a keyring out of it. The set list was amazing. She's at a new peak in her career. And it was just really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be in that room, be that close to her and see it. And it was such an overwhelming experience in a positive way that I bawled like a baby during the show and I wasn't expecting to.
Oh, I cried. Not going to lie, I cried. It just really hit me. This particular set list as well, you know, there are gems that she hasn't performed in years. There are the classics that people know. And there are a few, like, real treats for the fans. Justice for Glitter, that Glitter medley.
Justice for Glitter. I mean, when she teased she was doing the Glitter medley,
she wasn't lying.
And that's pretty much the reason why I booked my tickets. She was just there performing them so well, and it was just, these songs have so much meaning and have been played heavily throughout our lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't really, I could process it, but it was very overwhelming to process that. And it was just a real wonderful experience.
So glad to have shared that with you.
Ditto. And thank you, Mariah.
Thank you, Queen Mariah. Mimi, the elusive chanteuse. Now, shall we get all the way back to the year 2000? We're at the start of the year 2000. And S Club 7 won their first Brit Award.
Which is amazing for a pop act like that as well.
Yeah.
Which is why, again, sort of how I was saying earlier about how they always seemed a little bit cooler than Steps to me. You know, straight off the bat, S Club's winning a Brit Award.
Steps never won a Brit?
Steps did win a Brit Award for best live act, believe it or not, even though they were notorious mimers. No shade to Steps. They're amazing vocalists. Their new shows, they sing incredibly well.
We saw the recent tour. Yeah, that was amazing. Yeah.
It was the era people mimed. We're never shading that.
Yeah, never shading that. This is a place of love. This is a safe place for miming pop acts in the noughties. I just want to let you guys know that.
If you didn't clock onto that already.
Yeah, everything's amazing and iconic.
Newcomer Brit Award goes to S Club 7.
Hello everyone, so here we are on the beach in LA filming our second series, S Club 7 in LA. It's amazing to have won this Brit Award and it's a real honour. And we'd just like to thank Simon Fuller and All at 90 Management. We'd like to thank all our fans for your votes and support, thank you. And we'd like to thank Lucien Grange and All at Polydor. Which leads me to say, have a great night!
Very iconic year at the Brit Awards. This was the same ceremony that had Jerry performing and the Spice Girls.
Oh, I mean,
Bag It Up and the Spice Girls was getting, what, a Lifetime Achievement Award or something?
They were. Contribution to Music.
Contribution to Music. If you haven't
outstanding already, outstanding contribution to music.
If you haven't already, please go back and check out our most popular episode yet, which is a solo Spice Girls episode where we focus on their forays into their solo careers between 1998 and the year 2000. My phone just went off and Joel just rolled his eyes. It's usually you.
It is usually me. And I've got a message as well.
Oh. Also, S Club 7 started filming the second series of their TV show. This one's called LA 7.
So each season they take on a new place and they are in LA. They've come to Hollywood to try and make it. So, you know, we go LA 7, Hollywood 7, Series 3. Kind of still the same place, but different title. In LA 7, the little girl from The Exorcist is a prominent role. She plays their landlord.
Okay.
She plays this really, like, quirky, fun character.
Okay.
Kind of a mothering role to the gang in a way.
So did you enjoy this series? Did you enjoy LA 7?
I did.
How did it live up to your expectations of having seen Miami 7 as a kid and then you get into this one?
I loved it. Obviously, I think Miami 7 will always be the most special because it's the first one straight off the bat. But still so much fun, and it's just fun to see them trying to make it in LA, you know? Obviously, in Miami 7, they were performing songs at the hotel every week. But this time, there's like a cafe bar where they're always performing. This like cool little cafe bar.
S Club 7, booked and busy.
Booked and busy. They're still trying to make it. We've got Reach as the theme tune this time around. Performed on top of a rooftop. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Reach is, of course, the debut single off their second album. It came out in May 2000. Funnily enough, I know this is one of their more popular singles, but I was never a fan.
It's my least favourite S Club 7 single.
Really? Okay, thank you. We agreed on this. I thought we were going to have a fight.
No.
Reach.
So Reach, it's their signature song, I would say.
But
I don't accept
people,
it to be.
Some people, it really is.
I can't personally choose to have Reach as their signature song. For me, Don't Stop Moving and Bring It All Back are the signature two songs for me.
Mm.
And they're far superior songs. Now, Reach is a fun song. It just doesn't do it for me.
It's a little too retro in its sounding, but not retro in a cool way. They have said that Reach was actually a leftover from the first album. And it really shows. It seems like a nice kind of companion to, if you like, Bring It All Back. That kind of really summery, waving your hands in the air, kind of children's TV show theme song kind of vibe.
They even went on to perform the song still on the S Club United tour. Of course they're going to, but on their final tour. But they showed a video of Paul singing his verse on the tour, which is very nice because bands back then, like, for instance, when Jerry left the Spice Girls, they did everything they could to edit her out of every shot. You know, they wouldn't really ever reference it. Cut out of all the merchandise, cut out of all the visuals on the tour. So great to see still a little throwback nod.
Yeah, I think that's a respectful way of doing it, you know.
And then they went on to record a United version with S Club Juniors.
Oh, I don't think I've heard that one. Was it a studio version or live?
I think so. I think there's a B-side to it. So it's a B-side somewhere.
What did you think of the music video?
It's a funny one, the music video, for me. Because it has that sort of like weird, bleak opening and then they're kind of bringing the joy through on their big S Club bus.
Yeah, which, by the way, health and safety, honestly. Nobody should be standing on top of a bus when it's moving. I don't care if it's 20 k's an hour. And also, excuse me, they're dispersing candy and you're seeing people opening it up and eating it. That's not the right message to send kids. Don't fucking pick up strange candy that fell off the back of a truck. Definitely don't put it in your mouth.
I'm sorry, David.
I mean, Mama Lynn would have been worried.
What, my mum wouldn't have. Oh, go on, eat that Joe leg. Oh, that lovely, passing out sweets. So this wasn't served as a single in Australia or the United States. Natural served as the lead single.
But even though it wasn't formally released in Australia, apparently, it still made number 38 on the charts.
Or it could have just been imports that it charted via that high.
Yeah, could be. So Reach made number 2 in the UK, debuted at number 2, and it stayed there for 3 weeks. It absolutely couldn't, for the life of it, dislodge Sonique's It Feels So Good. But nonetheless, the single made platinum.
Platinum.
Platinum, Darling.
Platinum. Now, it also went to number 8 in Ireland, number 2 in Scotland.
Thank you, Scotland.
28 in New Zealand.
28 in New Zealand?
Yeah.
I guess it wasn't released there either. Shall we talk about the album?
Let's talk about the album, Seven. So we had the debut album, S Club. Now we've got the sophomore album, Seven.
Now, this is, to date, their best-selling studio album.
Now, this album was re-released at the end of the year. To include Never Had a Dream Come True.
Okay, that might be why.
Which is going to help with the sales. And then that's Christmas sales.
Yeah, that is Christmas sales. So it might be that.
That was a big single.
Yeah. So we'll definitely come to all the singles in this album. But let's maybe have a quick look at the direction, the vibe.
This album, for me, is my least favourite of the four albums. This one just felt quite average.
So I was having a listen to this, and like you said, there weren't that many tracks that were particularly memorable. Best Friend.
What's sweet is that my best friend, Harry Alexander. Hello, Harry.
Hi, Harry.
We both love S Club 7.
Okay.
And he'll sometimes, if he's ever listening to something, he'll screenshot that he's listening to Best Friend and send it to me.
Oh!
Which is so sweet.
This is so sweet. Best friend, never gonna let you down. Best friend, always gonna be around. You know,
whatever life put you through, they'll be there for you. We only best. Bring the House Down is quite a well-known fan favourite. They opened the reunion tour with this song.
Okay, choice.
Yeah. For me,
yeah.
My favourite album track is Stand By You, which is a Hannah and Tina-led song. I think they even performed it on CD UK or something once.
That's insane. Wow. So this album made number one in the UK, their only UK number one album, and it stayed on the charts for 69 weeks. That's the longest any S Club 7 album has stayed on the UK album charts. That's outstanding.
And then it peaked at number 7 again in the year 2001.
Pff, wow.
I think someone would have thrown a copy my way, wouldn't you?
We should go to Poundland and see if we can find it.
It went to number 69 on the US Billboard 200.
It charted in the US?
It charted in the US.
Is this the only album to chart there?
I think so. So it went to number 56 in Australia, 15 in Canada.
Okay, Canada. Wow.
Number 11 on the European Albums Chart, number 69 in France, 25 in Germany, 10 in Ireland, 15 in New Zealand, 2 in Scotland, and then allegedly on the year-end charts in the States in 2013, it was at 190. Allegedly.
We ready to move on to Natural?
Ooh, are we?
Now, you love this one, Joel. For very many reasons, you love Natural.
Oh, you love this one, Jolie. Go on. So, it wasn't until S Club 7's single Natural that they let their true lead singer come front and centre.
This is a shameless campaign to now, put Rachel Stevens at number one.
It was just a real thrill for the nation, for the world, to have Rachel front and centre. Oh, it's such a stunning, subtle, chill, upbeat number.
Chill upbeat number.
Yes. They're all on the beach. And I tell you, I used to have the Greatest Hits DVD growing up. And I would kind of like pause the DVD on that scene of the boys underneath the waterfall.
You pervert.
Getting a bit flustered thinking of it. And Rachel looks so gorgeous.
I mean, look at Paul. I'm holding up this CD single for Natural.
Look, Hannah getting too close there.
But Paul looks gorgeous here.
He does. Got great. A nice little tan.
Yeah. And that kind of shirt that says, all right, lads.
And then poor Tina's got a sticker over her face.
Oh, we can pull this out. We can have a closer look.
Oh, that. Oh.
Oh.
Tina's rocking a classic look. We've got like a denim skirt, a long denim skirt, and then like a halter neck top that like goes up to like a V.
Yeah, this is very Neve Campbell.
Like classic. Yeah, she's got a very Neve Campbell-esque about her, Altina.
Neve Campbell, that's a name that's not been said since the noughties, right? What's she doing now?
Look, I did a Scream 2 screening a few years ago, so...
Did she turn up?
But you're saying no one said her name. Now, did you notice on the music video, Rachel has ad-libs at the end that is not on the single version?
Wow, bonus.
And now on the original release, the album version's slightly different. It's got a bit more of like that 90s pop funk feel to it.
Okay.
Which is a bit more called up for the single edit. So I have a story about this song.
Oh, dear.
I would have been 14. So S Club would have been split up for quite a few years. The school were doing a talent show for children in need. And there were a lot of people signing up, you know. We were a stage school. So I sung Natural by S Club 7. And I got some girls to do it with me, but they weren't allowed to. They could only sing on the chorus.
Okay, yeah. So this was really a Joel Babington solo, but you know, you Nicole Scherzinger'd it.
Yeah, Rachel Stevens it. We submitted ourselves as Voices with Joel.
No, you did not.
Instead of Voices with Soul, which was a band on the X Factor at the time. So I said to the person hosting the event, can you introduce us as Voices with Joel? So he says, we've got Joel up next, and he's asked to be called Voices with Joel. No, honey. You just introduce us as Voices with Joel.
Do as you're told. Follow the brief.
Don't say Joel's next and he's asked to be introed as Voices with Joel.
It's such a shady thing to do.
Listen, honey. So it was recorded on DVD.
That's something to be cherished.
Yeah, I still have the DVD somewhere at my mum's house, but there is no way I'm ever unearthing it. I'm keeping it for the vault. Never needs to be watched.
Hashtag justice for Voices with Joel.
Hashtag justice for Voices with Joel. Hashtag reunion. So this was actually an English cover of a French song.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Oh.
Norma Rae's 1999 hit, Tous les morts de l'amour.
So Natural made number 3 in the UK, another big hit for S Club 7, number 45 in Australia.
The world just wasn't ready. At least it charted globally in a lot of places, 67 in France, 42 in Germany and 64 on the Swiss singles charts.
The next single wouldn't come from anything from the album. It's a brand new ballad that was chosen as the Children in Need single for the year 2000, and it's Never Had a Dream Come True. This is their most successful ballad, Joel.
Yeah,
most this successful.
It's a huge song.
Oh, iconic.
Huge.
Their only charting single in America.
Their only charting single
and
in America.
And we're talking the Hot 100, not like some sort of obscure sales chart.
And not low down, number 10.
They have a top 10 single in America with this. This was, I just couldn't fathom. I was like, how did this cross over? That's what I want to know. It's a stunning Joe O'Meara-led vocal performance, written and co-produced by Kathy Dennis. Get that coin, Auntie Kathy. So, the music video.
Bit cheap. We've got white backdrop, cream and white, big jackets, fur jackets, hopefully they're faux fur. And then all of a sudden they have those different looks, like the flicky hair and the metallics.
Yeah, it's like
quite
suddenly
jarring at the end.
It's like one is dressed for winter and the other's for the work Christmas party.
Yeah. The B-side to this song is one of the best Christmas songs ever.
Oh my God, hang on, let me get
Perfect
it out.
Perfect Christmas. It's a real lovely, a real fun, upbeat Christmas song. Quite a few of them have vocals on it.
They should have done it as a double A-side.
I guess you can't do a Christmas song for a Children in Need single.
No, but having a Christmas song as a B-side gives you something else to perform around the same time.
Yeah.
It hit number one in the UK. 5 months later, went over to the US, peaked at number 10. The band went on MTV's TRL to promote it. Big moves were happening.
I'm flustered thinking about it. Number two in Ireland. 31.
Thank you, Ireland.
Thank you, Ireland. Number 31 in New Zealand. Number one in Scotland. Thank you, Scotland. Platinum United Kingdom selling single. Thus, re-releasing the Seven album with Never Had a Dream Come True on it. But I see this more as starting the next era.
Do you really? I felt like it was just like, it was a nice way to sum up the year for S Club 7. They started off the year really strong with a Brit Award win, and they're rounding off the year with a Children in Need single that is a huge hit for them. The fact that I feel like this was a bit amiss in Australia meant that the next single that came, there was enough of a gap to really go big with the next single.
Oh, and big they did.
They've gotten to a point where they were desperate to start touring, and they were desperate to start doing something else to, you know, really connect with their fans, really go out on stage and perform. Because up to this point, they've still not done their headline tour.
Mm.
In early 2001, they announced their first tour.
The S Club Party Tour.
Just around the corner from the tour starting off in April 2001, they come back with a brand new single, Don't Stop Moving.
This song is undeniably, to me, one of the best British pop singles of all time.
Ooh!
Full stop.
Ooh, okay.
This is peak everything S Club 7.
Yeah.
Doesn't get better than this.
And I love, 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 love that it's a shared lead vocal action between Bradley, who sounds amazing on it, and Joe. Like, I love this combination. And I can't believe we've not had it before.
Yeah, because it feels quite signature to S Club 7.
I think it became signature after this was a success.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, no one thought about that. Like, you know, they work really well together. And I am obsessed with anything that is kind of early noughties disco pop. So this single gives it to me. This is right up my street.
This is the grown-up single to the people that gave you Bring It All Back. This is where they should be from debut to third album. This is like perfect trajectory.
Yeah.
Got a couple of stories with this song.
Go
when
on,
I
man.
Was 15.
Another audition.
I took myself along to an audition for a boy band. Took myself down to Pineapple, go downstairs, queue loads of boys there. Loads, loads, loads. So I sung Don't Stop Moving. They fucking loved it, mate.
I bet they did. Why wouldn't they?
They asked me to stay. I stayed right up until the end of the day, sung again, took my picture. Like, I was 15, so it was so exciting. But it was for more of like a rock band. And they were just like, yeah, we wish we were doing more of a poppier thing. Should be perfect.
What they should have fucking said is, do you know what? We'll do this rock band, but we're going to create another band all around you, and we're going to call it Voices with Joe. Did you ever find out about the band? Where did they debut? That they
I kept my eye on what was going on with the managers, but yeah. Nothing.
Imagine if it was like for The Wanted or something.
Oh my God.
How many times did you audition to be in a type of boy band or group?
Maybe 10 times, under 10 times.
Wow.
Not a lot.
We've not heard all 10 stories.
No, but there's not all 10 stories are memorable. Also, when I was 17, I was hired to host an event for the celebrating the Chinese New Year at a gay bar.
Talk about taking a gig from me.
I was like, yes, done. I literally thought I was the shit. I was 17. I had blonde hair by now. I just started going out with my first ever boyfriend. Like, I thought I was it. I did Don't Stop Moving with my two backup dancers.
Oh my God, you had backup dancers.
My other best friend, Amy, and Kylie, my sister. I'm sorry, we were rehearsed. We were incredible.
Wow. So you did Don't Stop Moving.
We Don't Stop Moving, Wham, Wake Me Up Before You Go Go. We did two dances as well. So it was a four-song set.
Wow,
two dances.
I hope you got paid properly for that.
We were 17, got paid by, like, free booze. I was in a gay bar. Yeah. 17, getting free drinks.
And living your pop star performer
dream.
Yeah,
and when you're, when you're training for, like, musical theatre, you'll get, as a student, you'll get exploited. It's like, you can do this for experience, do this for experience. Some low-budget shows in the West End get college students and just pay them expenses or, like, minimal.
Wow.
To be the ensemble of their show, which is bad.
Mm.
And then, so did dances too. We did a dance to Up by the Saturdays.
Oh, okay. Current. This is not very long ago, was it?
17, so 11 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, in my mind, the Saturdays only started a few years ago.
And we did a mashup to Toxic and Piece of Me.
Who did the music mashup things?
I edited the music.
So you were on GarageBand, like, putting it
just
together?
Yeah, whatever app, or not app, like, whatever software I had on my laptop at the time.
Oh, wow.
Shout out, Kylie choreographed the dances, and they were, we thought we were the shit. And I'll be honest, we was the shit.
Yeah, I get it.
And then I hosted it as well, so there were other people performing.
Did you let them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just about. My mum and Faye came and Elise came, and Faye drove us home from Charing Cross back to Essex.
Oh, wow. Nothing brings the family together like Chinese New Year, they always say in my family. Yeah. Now I know that we have a performer with experience hosting Chinese New Year events. That might just be a gig for you in Kuala Lumpur.
Yes, I'm available for the tour.
Shall we go back to talking about Don't Stop Moving and the accolades?
Yes.
The single debuted at number one in the UK, selling 178,000 copies in its first week. Eventually, it would be certified platinum, selling over 800,000. It hit number one not once, but twice on the charts. In between the times it was number one the first time and the second time, Jerry's It's Raining Men stayed on top of the charts for 2 weeks.
I'm sorry, but what, like, an incredible 4 weeks in history.
Yeah.
To what, like, literally what
I mean,
time to be
gay
alive.
Rights.
Gay rights.
Don't Stop Moving is the seventh best-selling single in the UK of 2001. In Australia, it hit number two.
Australia was just like, welcome back. Double platinum in Australia.
Mm.
Platinum in the United Kingdom.
Don't Stop Moving won Record of the Year, beating Kylie's Can't Get You Out of My Head, Atomic Kitten's Hole Again, Survivor by Destiny's Child, Hearsay's Pure and Simple. Insane. Everybody knows this one. It's a classic. So the S Club Party 2001 tour, their first headline tour.
Growing up, my older sister Faye is 14 years older than me, and she was a great big sister to me and Kylie growing up, and she was literally like, we're going on this tour. She got us tickets, no questions. Like, this is, you know, this is the show. You can't miss this show. I still have the tour program from that tour. And they were promoting about brushing your teeth but not leaving the tap on, how to be environmentally friendly. There was a whole page in the tour book.
Oh, really?
About that.
That's very sensible.
That's what it stands for, Sensible Club 7. I was young. Really young, so I can't remember it from real life that much, but it's because I had it on DVD and watched the DVD so much.
Mm.
I'm jealous of that girl that Rachel brought up to sing I Really Miss You with her. It's like, why are you like, I got that with a little girl, like, she can sort of sing it to me, Rach. There was a car at one point on stage. Their costumes were absolutely excellent for this show.
Did everyone get to do a solo-ish?
Ish, because Hannah and Tina have Stand By You.
Yeah, and they sing that on tour.
I sang that on tour.
That's nice.
Yeah, they all had a moment.
Nice one, nice one. Well, I've got to tell you that we've been waiting a long, long, long time to do a tour and show you guys live what the show can be like. The show's like this, and I hope you dig it. Huge crowd. Can I ask, I want to see what noise you can make in this arena. And there's some guys, Manchester!
Okay, guys, so this is a message from the future. Turns out, covering 20 years of S Club 7 in one single podcast episode isn't ambitious. It's downright stupid, isn't it, David?
I mean, it's only taken us about a month to try and get this out the door.
I mean, David's been chipping away at it. There's only so much he can, you know. He had bloody 48 hours worth of material on me talking about Rachel alone, let alone 20 years of S Club 7.
And your solo career, let's not forget.
And my solo career.
This is an S Club journey through the lens of Joel Babington.
I don't think I was ready to share voices with Joel, with the world, but that's the things we do for what we love, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, put it this way, the research chat for your Piers Morgan life story is already done. We've got it here. So if they're ever ready, we can play them the tapes.
No,
I'm save not, you a bit of time.
I'm not letting a researcher off that easy. Oh. So we've decided to turn our 20 Years of S Club special into two parts. So this was the end of part one, and keep your eyes peeled for part two, which will be coming very, very soon. Do let us know all your favourite S Club 7 moments. We're at Right Back Pod on all social media platforms, and we want to hear from you. Did you prefer Bring It All Back or S Club Party? What's your favourite album track? Do you think Rachel's the true lead singer of S Club? Let us know.
Who is your favourite member of S Club?
Oh, everyone's
I'm not, well, I'm not asking you. We know that. Give someone else a chance to vote.
Yes, I'm at Dr_JoelB.
And I'm at FeedLimmy on Twitter and at LoveLimmy on Instagram.
So do get involved, do interact with us, and we'll be back extremely soon.
Yes, I promise not to leave it that long next time.
All right, thanks, guys. Bye.